Coming out this Saturday on Beyond the Vibe, I'm joined by Dean Rowland of Collective Soul.
Where we were coming from at that time, the 94, I mean, so that was like, I think it was August of 94 when Woodstock 94 happened. 8, 9, 10 months prior to that, we were still playing clubs, you know, wishing people would, you know, like our music and connect to it. And then when it happened fast for us. At the time, the camaraderie of the bands that were playing, especially on the day we played was, I want to say, Sheryl Crow played, Blues Traveler. It was a King's X played. It was great, man. We had a Candlebox. It was great. The 99 Woodstock was definitely different. Turn your head now, baby, just spit me. We recorded this record at Elvis Presley's estate in Palm Springs. So there was some element of like, we knew we had access to it for, I think, 4 to 6 weeks. And we lived in Palm Springs. It's kind of, we went old school for us. We haven't done that in some time where we just go on location. We live together. We live and breathe it. And I think that kind of fed the creative spirit too. Like, we were there and like, what else are we going to do? Let's just keep making music. Great fortune of playing with a bunch of different bands. Like, you know, it might not make sense to say it out loud, but we played with Metallica on a tour in South Africa, and I love that band and those guys. But like, it was such a fun. That was a fun few shows. So, I mean,
how did that dynamic work? I mean, a lot of people who aren't familiar that happened might be going, what?
Yeah, right. I'm sure James was like, who the hell? How? What? What are y'all doing?
Thanks a lot, Woodstock!
How are you doing?
I am doing well, thank you. Are you?
Doing well, thank you. I like your vibe there. It's cool.
So I'm here with Dean Rowland of Collective Soul. Thank you very much for joining me. Of course, you have this new double album on the way, Here to Eternity, coming out on May 17th, celebrating 30 years of Collective Soul. So with that in mind, I'd like to kind of touch on a few of those early year moments there. So what was that? Like, going right back to the beginning, was there a moment for you where you thought, you know, this is what I want to do? I want to be a musician. I mean, obviously, you grew up with your brother. Was it kind of a musical household?
It was a musical household. Yeah. Our father was a voice major in college and then went on to become, he went into the ministry and became a Southern Baptist preacher. And our mother played piano. So we grew up in the church with, you know, church music, church choir, and, you know, the music was pretty much all encompassing for the most part. But I didn't fully engage and embrace it until, you know, for me, a little older, probably my late teens, I guess. It's been around us our entire life.
Of course, you know, you have that first single, you know, I'm going to say Shine at some point. Yeah. You know, it's become such a huge anthem. I'm assuming Ed kind of wrote that and came to you at some point. Did you have a feeling that, you know, there's something special here? I mean, this is a song that's just stuck with you for that whole 30 year journey so far.
I mean, I remember him showing me the riff early on and the song, and it went on to, he recorded it as a demo, on the, which is a lot of the first record, hence Allegations, that edited. There was some band stuff on there, and there was a lot of just a song, basically a songwriter demo, trying to get a either a record deal or a publishing deal. I remember hearing it and liking it, but like, you know, who knows what really connects with people and what it, I mean, I don't, I mean, I knew I liked it and it was fun to play live. It still is fun to play live. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, it's evolved into this, its own thing, you know, connection to our fans. And, but I didn't, you know, I was not a fortune teller. I didn't know that that would be the song. In fact, when that the album came out, it just, I gave that demo to the local college station in Atlanta, where I was going to school at the time, and didn't even tell them what song to play or ask them a song to play. I was just like, just see what you think. And I think there was like 5 or 6 songs on there. I can't remember at the time. I mean, we can't remember now, but that was the one that they chose. But I think Ed and I had in the back of our mind some other song, but you know, things just take a life of their own.
Of course, after that, you know, you quickly went out and hit the road, and you know, the rest is history. Obviously, having read everything, you guys were only one of kind of 5 bands that had played both Woodstock 94 and then the kind of more ill-fated 99. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people kind of my age and younger will be more familiar of that through the Netflix documentary.
Right. 99 one, yeah.
Yeah. did you kind of realize that there was a different kind of flavor this time around? I mean, 94, there's, you know, it was a bit more, I think, closer to the original feel. And then 99, I mean, obviously, it went a different way.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to say, like looking through that lens of where we were coming from at that time, the 94. I mean, so that was like, I think it was August of 94 when Woodstock 94 happened. I mean, it was just the beginning of that year. So, you know, reverse 8, 9, 10 months prior to that, we were still playing clubs and, you know, wishing people would, you know, like our music and connect to it. And then when it happened fast for us. So it felt great. I know that, like the camaraderie, at the time, the camaraderie of the bands that were playing, especially on the day we played was, I want to say Sheryl Crow played Blues Traveler, live. It was a King's X played. It was great, man. We had a Candlebox. It was great. The 99 Woodstock was a little, it was definitely different, but we didn't fully experience the chaos that went down. We didn't play, we played on at a different time. So it was kind of offset. Yeah. It was kind of like 94, like when we played on the Friday in 94, and the Saturday was when the rains came and the mud happened. And, you know, you see Green Day and Nine Inch Nails and that whole, all of that stuff going down. We were just there the day before all of that kind of chaos happened. And kind of similar to the same thing in 99. I don't know if it was good or bad fortune, but we sort of sidestepped the drama of each one of those.
I think that's always the way to be. I mean, having seen that, those recordings of you guys when you went out both times, it felt like you guys had dodged the incidents.
Yeah. Right. We're not opposed to walking into some danger, but it just happened that way.
Yeah. Of course, the new album, Here to Eternity, obviously it's a double album.
Yeah.
Was that an intentional thing from the get-go? You know, this time we're going to do a double album?
It wasn't a full-on intentional thing, but I think we had, like, tossed around the idea over the years of, like, you know, like, kind of flippantly. Like, it'd be cool to do a double record, you know, do a double album. We came up in the 70s where it was, like, pretty fancy to do one, you know, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road or The Wall. I'm not comparing our records to that, but in terms of just like that was a Quadrophenia, that it was a fun thing, like to put some songs down when you're off the road, like go and rock it. You're in a good groove. You've been touring. Chemistry in the band is feeling great. And so it was always in the back of our mind. And then once we got to, we recorded this record at Elvis Presley's estate in Palm Springs. And so there was some element of like, we knew we had access to it for, I think, 4 to 6 weeks. And we just, we lived in Palm Springs. It's kind of, we went old school for us. We haven't done that in some time where we just go on location. We live together. We, mm-hmm. we live and breathe it. And I think that kind of fed the creative spirit too. Like we were there and like, what else are we going to do? Let's just keep making music type vibe. We were probably 2 weeks into it and we're like, we'd already recorded the guts of say 8 or 9 songs, maybe even 10 at that point. And we're like, damn, like we can just, let's just keep going. Like the momentum, we had found the spark, the creative spark. And we were like, let's just keep rolling with this thing. And then kind of reminded us like, well, yeah, we do. Yeah, we did. Yeah. Doing a double album. Yeah. Why not? I mean, we can pull this off, see what happens. It's a lot to digest. I know that. I mean, even to be a part of it, creating and writing and playing it, it's a lot to digest. So, and I know as a listener too, it's like when you listen to double albums, it's a lot of music. But I think it's something that will stand the test of time. I feel confident in that.
Did you go in kind of and just make these songs from scratch, or did you have kind of a bit of a plan? That, I mean, obviously you mentioned there was kind of an initial 10 there. Was that the ones that you went in with? And then,
yeah. Well, some, we kind of work in terms of if we're rehearsing, we'll kind of rehearse what we're supposed to do in the show. And we will, whatever, to make sure everybody's familiar. But it's like when we get together, it's like we'll just jam some new ideas. So, and then we'll put them into the set list. So a lot of, and that happens in rehearsals and it happens in sound checks. So some of the ideas we had gone through and we actually even put into the set list, but we hadn't recorded them yet. So we were familiar. And then some of them were just on the, you know, within that real time moment that they came out, and those are fun. Because you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it's a double-edged sword because, you know, some of the tunes, when you get the chance to work them out, especially you're playing them in front of people, you're definitely on your toes and you're trying to figure out what works and what doesn't work, almost like improvisational. And it happens really quickly then that you sharpen the knives fast. So it was a blend. It really was both. So that helped expedite it. But once you hit that creative groove, we found this in the past, you just, you roll with it, keep going. And until you kind of, for that moment, you run out of ideas and then, you know, take a break.
Was this kind of, I mean, obviously we mentioned, you know, going to Elvis's house and kind of living there. Did that change the process of the album? Like, did you, like, how does that go? You know, like, does like Ed go and work on lyrics and you guys do something, or does he come to you? And like, how does that work?
That's a great question. You end up, so you establish your situation, you know, we set up a gear. So the Elvis only, I think he was the only person that ever recorded in that house. And it was like, when you walk in the front door, there's a living room and it's just this big room and a huge window that overlooked the pool and the Palm Springs mountain area, hills area. And, so you kind of, we would get our footing. Everybody knows where they're going to, you know, be. We just kind of just get acquainted with the environment. And then you just, and I think this is, just comes with time, and for us anyway, it's like you just know when to give somebody space. Ed needs to go away and figure out some lyrics. Jesse's got to do a guitar part. It, you know, it's just like this moving organism of a creative space that there's no judgment. And it sounds a little kumbaya, but it's, you know, it's respect and kindness of just the environment. And then you have to go in and, you know, attack it at certain points and just, you know, be vulnerable and contribute. But it is, that's a great question. You're just kind of feeling it out constantly. Mm. And fortunately, there was enough space there where, you know, step outside, you know, step into the control room, which was Lisa Marie's bedroom, her childhood bedroom. Ooh. At the house, which is interesting. I think you just, those things you just kind of fill out and see where it lands.
I mean, it must be unusual having, like, it's in a house of like one of the most historic musicians ever. One of my kind of personal favorites off the albums is Mother's Love. You know, it has that great riff in there. Can you remember kind of how that came about?
That was one of the ones we had been working that thing out the year prior. So, you know, whatever year we're in now, the year prior before recording on tour. And we would, they all run together. But we would play it. That was one of the ones through sound check, and then throw it in the set here and there. And even that, like, we thought we had kind of had it nailed down. But then there was like a few different parts where you get in the studio and you're focused, and parts are isolated, and you're really hearing what everybody's doing without it being in a big concert hall. You really hone in to parts. So that one was a little more developed from a live perspective.
Is there one off the album that, you know, you're particularly kind of proud of or happy with, one for maybe fans to look out for?
Yeah, there's a few for sure. Probably my favorite, like, right now anyway. It kind of fluctuates because I haven't really listened back to it in a little while, because I want to give it some freshness in my head, you know, because you start to hear it more when you're doing promo and you're getting it going. I love the song Bluer Than Blue. It's one of those, and it's hard to say your band has a certain sound, but it's to me, it's a quintessential Collective Soul song. It's like, it's got the riff and it's got this, to me, a really cool melody, honest lyrics, and I feel like every time we step in the ring, that's kind of what we're looking for. It can come in different forms. It could be a rock riff song, or it could be a piano ballad or whatever, but honestly, we're in search of, you know, a nice melody and some honest lyrics with a good backbeat. And that song, for me, I really do enjoy it.
On there, I felt that there was quite a few what I class as kind of epic songs. You know, you had like Words Away and No Man's Land. You know, it feels like these kind of big scale chorus anthems. What was the kind of process for those in particular? I mean, they feel like kind of the bigger ones. Obviously, you've got kind of this different flavors throughout the double album. I mean, I imagine that's the freedom of that.
Yeah. So yeah, that is true. I mean, it's almost like you force yourself into the room and expand the walls if you're going to take that route. And we've always at least tried to, or strive to, make a, you know, we don't put ourselves in any kind of box or genre, and just serve the song is what I like to say. And if you get a spark of inspiration or some creative thought, you serve that thought and you keep serving each one beyond that. And hopefully that, you know, it turns into something that you could be proud of. That's a, you know, call a song. When you're doing it, I don't know that we considered it, because I don't know that we were we thought we were making a double record necessarily. We were just going in. But once you're in that space, that creative bubble, you just start to find you want to touch every wall. Like, what happens over here if you do this thing? Mm. You know, what if we go halftime into this course, you know, or, you know, double time here, or, you know, all of these ideas are just constantly like flying all around from everyone. And that's like our little happy place or safe place, you know. Just go in and just let the ideas fly.
Mm. There are guests on the album, of course. There's Mickey Thomas of Jefferson Starship, Peter Stroud, Brian Ray. What was these kind of collaborations like for you guys? I mean, how did they come about? I mean, I heard Brian Ray was kind of, didn't Ed like catch him in the street or something?
Something like that. Yeah, they had like a happenstance moment. And that was fun, right? And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll come, you know, blah. So it was a lot of that. Thank you. Especially for Brian, Mickey is from Georgia. Like he grew up in Cairo, Georgia, not far from us. We met him. We met him like, I don't know, 15 years or so ago. And he came to one of our shows and we were just mutual fans of one another and just became friends. And it just so happened that, you know, we were in Palm Springs, which is where he lives in Palm Desert. And it just worked out that, you know, he was like, yeah, you know, I'd love to come sing with you guys. And it was a very just organic and, you know, collaborative, no pressure, just more, you know, musicians just hanging out, having fun. Peter has been a great friend for many years. He and Ed have worked together on several different projects. Peter works with Sheryl Crow, has been with Sheryl for many years. And he's just, it's just a fun addition. It's like, the kindred spirit thing. And there's like the no ego, like, you know, Jesse plays lead guitar. When Peter comes in, those dudes just work together. It's awesome. I mean, it's fun for me to watch because I don't even step into that realm. I'm just like a total, you know, fan, just going, wow. But I'm sitting in the room, I'm sitting right next to him, and I'm like, this shit's cool, man. All right, I dig it. Yeah, Peter is he's a brother, and he's family to us.
Was it interesting having that kind of new face coming in and kind of contributing? Did any of them kind of put forward suggestions or ideas of like, you know, oh, what happens if we do this or go this direction?
Sure.
Is it kind of good to
sure.
have that?
It's great to have that. Yeah. Ideas are always welcome, you know, like, and that's the thing is like, when you're in that creative space, you try to build it to where it's like this little trust bubble, or you kind of get in there and you can just be, even like the most ridiculous idea could be amazing or whatever. So you never know, like, just like, I don't know, let's try it and see what happens. But all those ideas are welcome. And in I think the environment that we try to create for ourselves, is that, which Peter can come in and he's like, what if you, he will totally, I know he's done it. He's like, what if you try like this and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, oh, I like that. Like, it's a very, you know, collaborative, creative friendly thing that, you know, and that's the way you want it to be. It can be a, you know, an infinite amount of ways to be done, but we find it to be more fun in that realm, especially when you're in that little area. You know, you gotta, let's get it done, but let's have fun doing it, and every idea is open.
Looking back at that kind of the 30 years so far, is there a particular highlight for you, like a moment where you think, you know, that was a cool thing, or that was a great moment? Is there a thing for you? I mean, it could be an album.
There's a lot of them, man. yeah. I mean, I think I mean, you could start at the beginning. I remember our very first show after having gotten, we had been playing clubs and whatnot, but you could feel the energy. And it's always made me question, like, does it come from within or without, whatever, like internal or external? And you would have, like, you could feel the everything being magnified. And I remember we played a show called, what was the name of the club in Orlando, Florida, after we'd been getting played on first commercial radio station. Shine was being played. It was called The Station, I think. And walked in that night and the club was just packed and you could feel the energy going. I'm like, oh, wow. Because prior to that, it had just been like, you know, people would come watch us play, but it wasn't, it hadn't been magnified, so to speak. And like, that was my first experience of like, oh, this is something else. This is a different feeling. So that one definitely stood out. And through the years, like, there's, we've had the great fortune of playing with a bunch of different bands. Like, you know, it might not make sense to say it out loud, but we played with Metallica on a tour in South Africa. And I love that band and those guys, but like, it was such a fun, that was a fun few shows. So, I mean,
how did that dynamic work? I mean, a lot of people who aren't familiar that happened might be going, what?
Yeah, right. I'm sure James was like, who the, how, what are y'all doing? To be honest, I'm not sure how it went down, but I know that it was, we sure did open for them and it was great. We had fun. And somehow, I mean, you know, our music is diversified enough. If, you know, if we have to show up and play like heavier stuff, we can do it. Not like Metallica, but we can do it. But yeah, that's kind of like an odd couple, mix there.
You know, I think though that I remember having spoke to kind of a few people from back in the day, they used to be these kind of odd couple partnerings.
Yeah.
Like, there was an old band called Curved Air. They were like a prog rock band and they got put on the same billing as Black Sabbath. So yeah. They opened for Black Sabbath. So, you know, it happened. I think we need a bit more of it. You know, it's a bit of variety, isn't there?
I remember we would go play. We played many times at the Fillmore in San Fran, and they make posters of each show of everyone that plays there. They'll hang them up throughout the venue. And you'd look at it, and it would be like Jefferson Starship. And I mean, pick somebody like completely opposite. I'm like, oh, and the Grateful Dead. That's cool. Okay. And it was like, yes. And you know, whatever pop star was going on at the time. And it was just music, right? It hadn't like fragmented to where the genres were split off for marketing reasons. And it was a beautiful, beautiful time for me, I think, in music. I wasn't around then necessarily, but I love the idea of that, where it's just, it's just a mishmash, but it still somehow it fits, you know?
Do you guys like to kind of apply that to your own, but I mean, obviously per song and per album, I mean, we've got heavier ones there. Do you not like to kind of box yourselves into this particular genre? I mean, I'm hearing more and more now of artists going, you know what, we kind of like that freedom of being like, right, this feels like this, so we're going to go in this direction.
Yeah, it's never really been a conscious thought for us. It's like I was saying earlier, it's a serve the song, serve the inspired moment, and see where that takes you. You know, we obviously have a range of what we can do or what we even know how to do, but we accept all the inspiration that we can and digest it and try not to put any parameters or label ourselves as anything. I mean, we've always, we got asked early on, like, because we had Heaven Let Your Light Shine Down as a lyric in our, you know, the first single, and there was a lot of spiritual overtones in the music, and our father was a Southern Baptist preacher. So we're like, are you a Christian rock band? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, are you a grunge? Because of the time, they were like, are you a grunge? They call us grunge light or whatever. And like, I don't know, man. All that stuff gives me a headache. We just play music and, you know, we're a rock and roll band. You know, we're just trying to find a good melody. That's really it.
A question I always like to finish on that I ask every guest. It's a bit of a hypothetical one and kind of weirdly ties in. If you guys could tour with one band from the past and one from the present, who would they be?
Mm-hmm.
So you got complete freedom. We could go with a wild mismatch. I mean, we kind of mentioned it there.
Yeah, I kind of go into like just personal faves. Like, it'd be fun to be able to watch John Bonham play drums live, Steve Zeppelin at some point. That would have been amazing. In the past, I know Jimmy and Robert and John Paul are around. Present? I don't know. Present, you know, and we've played with them in the past. You know who I'd like to play in the present is Oasis. I'd like to see them get back together, and I'd like to play with them again. I think that would be good for the world to see those knuckleheads team up and get together again.
It's like a interesting double brother dynamic.
Right. Yeah.
No, it could be interesting. I mean, I think the question will be whether we can get them back, but
well, I guess it would be like a present wish if it were to be kind of a present future wish.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, Dean. And of course, for those out there that want to pre-order the new double album, Here to Eternity, you can via the link in the description below. And of course, you'll be going out on the road soon, won't you, with Hootie and the Blowfish?
We're going to start in May, beginning of June, and we're gone throughout the summer.